Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, practical resources. I tell stories about what worked, but also those big epic fails that I've learned from. I interview experts, I share ideas, and all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so last couple podcast episodes, we've been talking about project-based learning. Before that, we did a deep dive into AI. We talk about what it means for students to be creative in a changing world. And today, we're going to be talking a little more about project-based learning, yes, but collaboration in particular. And so I'm super excited about this. But before we dive into that, I just want to say, if you have not checked out my blog, it is spencereducation.com. And if you want to check out my YouTube channel, it is spencervideos.com. So please check those out. I've got resources. I've got free things that you can download. I have all kinds of different articles, obviously podcast episodes. And so if you haven't checked it out yet, please do so. Again, you can find everything at spencereducation.com. And without further ado, here is today's podcast episode, all about the four pitfalls of student collaboration and what we can potentially do about it. We've all been there before. You're working with a few other people and everything just seems to click. It might be on the ball field or on the court. It might be in a jam session or rehearsal for live theater. And if you're lucky, it might be a collaborative team of teachers that you work with. You bounce ideas back and forth and offer honest feedback from a place of trust and mutual humility. The mood shifts from intense concentration at one point to laughter and deep discussion, and maybe if you're lucky, even vulnerability. These groups are really good at challenging each other's ideas, but also giving affirmation. And in these moments, you realize that together you're creating something that you could never have created on your own. But you've also experienced the downside of small group collaboration, where things move slowly with constant disorder and discord, flat engagement, avoidance. You've been there. And deep down inside, you knew that you were attending a group, but you were working alone. And in some cases, the team dynamics became, well, downright toxic. As teachers, I've seen both extremes. We all have. We've had students in small groups experiencing the collective sense of flow as they work back and forth to accomplish a goal. And those moments are amazing. You watch in amazement as they generate creative ideas, offer meaningful feedback, and create something together that they could never have created on their own. And in these moments, you realize that your students have moved beyond cooperation and into a place of genuine collaboration. But again, we've also had those times where the group work didn't exactly work. One student dominated, other members simply checked out, or they didn't even get started, the groups argued. I mean, you've seen that as well. And I mention this because creative collaboration is a critical component of project-based learning and design thinking, but it's not as simple as just assigning members to teams and then walking away. Collaboration is harder because it's deeply relational, and relationships have challenges. In other words, collaboration is hard because people are challenging. But as teachers, we can be proactive in the way we design our projects and our collaboration in a way where we can mitigate some of these pitfalls. Again, this is no guarantee that it's going to work every time. But what we can do is find ways to make it work. And so let's take a deep dive into these five different pitfalls and what we can do about it. Let's start with pitfall number one. One student does all the work. Remember those group projects in high school where you did all of the work and yet somehow all the students got the credit? Or maybe you didn't do any of the work, but you got the credit as a result and you were part of the problem. Well, whatever it is, researchers have a term for this. It's called cognitive loafing, which is just a fancy word for being lazy. It's where team members assume someone else will take care of the work, and thus they pull back and do nothing. Why bother working if you can get full credit without the work? But actually, it's a little more complicated than just being lazy. There are a lot of reasons why students might disengage, and it's not always about just pure laziness and not wanting to work. It could be fear and insecurity. If students have low skill level or low efficacy, they're going to disengage. What looks like laziness might just be fear masquerading as indifference. Difficulty, if the work is simply too hard, students give up. It's what we all do when work is too hard. If you put me in a doctoral class for physics, guess what? I'm not doing anything in that group because I can't contribute anything at all. Like, I don't have a doctorate in quantum mechanics. Confusion. Sometimes students just don't know what to do, and this lack of clarity creates problems. Lack of motivation. Sometimes they're just not interested in the project at hand, and when that happens, it's a motivation thing. And buy-in. Sometimes students just aren't bought into it. They don't have a sense of agency or ownership, and so they disengage. Those are some of the reasons why. The truth is, it's idiosyncratic. Like, each kid has a different reason for disengaging in their group. But what can we do about it? Like, what's our solution? I think a key solution is to build interdependence. Often the default in a project is for one member to work independently while others just depend on that single member. But interdependence is this overlap between I'm doing the work independently and someone is depending on me. And so when this happens, I depend on you, you depend on me, and together we work interdependently. So what can we do in PBL? One of the solutions here in terms of interdependence is craft your projects in a way where there is individual processing time and each member is personally accountable for the work they're doing, but other members have to depend on them. All right, so what does this actually look like, right? Individual accountability, you're depending on each other, sounds great. Well, let's talk about the research phase of a project. An interdependent approach encourages every student to do research on their own. So they might be working in pairs with like two or three pairs in the group. They might be working by themselves. That's fine. There's a chance to process in a way that's alone, but also together, okay? They then read texts that are at varying reading levels and interest levels, and then they're gonna share out what they learned in a research debrief. Or you might have something like a shared graphic organizer and they all add to the graphic organizer. So then you as a teacher can provide students with leveled readers that are at their independent reading level. And what that does is it allows every student to participate in a way where the differentiation is built into it. But this presents a new challenge. What about students who are working at different speeds? We all have some students who work really fast, some students who work really slow. What do we do? Here's where it helps to create a range for students that focuses on quality rather than quantity. So maybe your students are answering research questions that they've generated, and you might have one student who answers two questions in a class period. And that's it. That's all that they answer. And it takes them a while to do this. Another student answers eight. Well, that's okay. It's about quality and not quantity. And you, as a teacher, might have to train students to get over the quantity piece. You know, one of the things I tell them is I don't measure how many words or even seconds each member speaks in a group. Or when we do silent reading time, I don't check how many words each person is reading in a 30-minute period. It's no different with this. And so getting them over the notion that everyone has to do the exact same amount of work, it's about quality. In some cases, though, you might have students at vastly different skill levels. And that becomes a problem as well. In these moments, you're trying to like bridge the gap between students who are at a low level and a high level, and it just creates frustration. So what helps here is actually to do mixed skill groups, but to set it up into a three-tiered system. So students at the top tier, they are the ones who need virtually no help on the project. Their skill level is really high. They don't need to be retaught anything. It's super easy. The second group is going to need some help along the lines. You know, there's going to be some moments where they ask questions, but not a lot of help, and they don't necessarily need much. The last group is the group that really needs help. They're going to need some additional scaffolds. They're going to need you to reteach them. You're going to need to sit down and meet with them during projects for 5-10 minutes at a time and make sure they're on task. And so what you can do is set up these tiers. And then from there, you can kind of rank your students if you want. You can group them together. But you might have a student who's number one at the core skills, along with 4, 8, and 12, and that's your first group of four. Another group might be 2, 6, 5, and 10. But then you might have a different group in that third tier who's 25, 28, 31, and 33. And that's okay. That last group might need some additional scaffolds, supports, templates. You might modify the project slightly for them, and that's totally fine. They can function really well. In my experience, when I do this tiered process, what ends up happening is the students who are at like a level 12 end up working really well in that first tier group, and it challenges them. A student who might be at a level 3 or 4 is getting to be a sort of a group leader instead of having a level 1 or the first ranked person doing all the work. It takes some of that competition out that happens with your top 3 or 4 students in a particular skill level. And then it allows, in many cases, some of the kids who are at that middle zone to rise to the occasion and really take leadership. And they see the work that other folks are doing in it, and it pushes them to work harder. And then those who need a lot of additional support, they actually start participating in projects. They don't tune out. They don't quit working. But you can also design some of the tasks within the project to be differentiated. So I have this example on the blog post that corresponds to it, where each member has a role where they're going to analyze research questions, and based on the role, they analyze it together. Member number one is evaluating 2, 3, 4, and they all have a different task related to evaluating the quality of their research questions. And notice, one person can't do it all because they're only responsible for one specific question. Is it specific, or is it fact-based, or is it on topic? So you can check out that protocol. It's just an example of what that looks like. Pitfall number 2 is one student dominates the creative process. So instead of one person doing all the work, this is sort of like the moment where one person wants to have the creative vision for the project. And in many groups, the student who dominates doesn't even know that they're dominating. The student might feel that they're passionately defending an idea or engaging in meaningful dialogue. But other group members sort of let go and they don't speak up, and you don't have an opportunity to have shared creative vision. And I think that becomes really problematic in classrooms, especially with students who are less popular, with students who are shy, with students on the spectrum. There's a lot of different groups that don't get an opportunity. So what does it mean here? Well, what we can do is we incorporate individual voice into collaboration. So I share an example of a brainstorming strategy where instead of having students brainstorm collectively as a group, they brainstorm individually first and then share their ideas together as a group, and then they narrow it down using a protocol. And so the goal here is that you want to create moments where students have their individual voice. It's also that during a project, you might have components. They might be doing prototyping, for example, and each person has a different role. Each person has a different job. Each person's working on a different section of the project. And what you're doing is you're adding that individual voice, but also accountability to the collaboration. Pitfall number three, groupthink. So groupthink is where everyone follows the same thinking process. They don't challenge each other's ideas. And you run into this issue where it lacks divergent thinking. There's a great section in the book Originals by Adam Grant, by the way, that really takes a deep dive into this. But what does it mean to solve groupthink? One of my favorite solutions is intergroup peer feedback. So typically in a classroom setting, groups are going to work in silos, figuratively, of course, like you don't want to have like physical silos, but you get the idea. And collaborative teams can easily work on an entire project without even interacting with anyone else in the classroom. So what you're doing here is you're just creating moments where you invite other group members to speak into how your group is doing. I have a 20-minute peer feedback process that you can check out. And it's one of my favorite examples of what this looks like in action, because I think it can work really, really well. Sometimes it might be that you, during a project, you take students out of their initial groups and they move into like affinity groups where they might have an editing group that is working together. And even though they're all editing separate projects, they can work together, problem solve, things like that. Any element where you can move students away from their core group and interact with others is a chance to break up some of that groupthink. Pitfall number four, conflict, an inability to resolve conflict. So sometimes kids are going to clash. Personalities are going to clash. There's going to be issues. Sometimes the conflict is personal. Sometimes it's a conflict in creative vision. When I was a kid, there used to be this TV show, VH1 Behind the Music, and so many bands broke up because of, quote, creative differences. And, you know, obviously that wasn't Fleetwood Mac. In the case of Fleetwood Mac, it was like they were all sleeping with each other. But in terms of most of the groups, like they had a creative difference in terms of their vision. And I think the same thing can happen in PBL. We see ego getting in the way. We see an inability to listen to each other. And so what is the solution to this? Well, the creative differences is tricky. You're going to have to navigate that together in your group. But the personality conflict, that issue, we can resolve with a conflict resolution process. And you can download the conflict resolution protocol that I have here in the blog post. It's in our PBL toolkit if you want to check that out. But you have part one, review norms. Part two, each partner gets a chance to share. Part three, you identify the conflict. Part four, take responsibility. Part five, negotiate potential solutions. So that's the fifth part. Part six, you narrow it down to one single solution, and then part seven is closure. Okay, finally, pitfall number five is something that we've all experienced. We see it, it happens. It's tough when it does, and it is simply this. Groups aren't self-managing. Sometimes students struggle to self-manage. They can't get started, they procrastinate, and they just wait. They start out well and they get distracted at times. And in those moments, they fail to move forward and they're not self-managing. So we want to see them as self-starters and self-managers. So how do we solve it? One of the best solutions is to have students own the project management process. To keep students on task and focused, you have one single project manager, and this person runs the group scrum board or project log or whatever protocol you're using for management. And at the start of the class period, each member says, "Today I will blank. When I'm finished, I will blank." And the project manager helps keep the group on task. You can then have a quick meeting each day where you ask each project manager if they're on task, and it creates this sort of positive peer pressure. In the end, there's no perfect solution. You're still gonna have moments where group members argue, there's challenges, all that kind of stuff. But I will say this, when we design collaboration in these ways where we are being proactive, it just makes it so much more feasible. And I want to point out that you're probably going to notice something about this. Each of these include structure, right? Structure is not a bad thing. It sometimes gets a bad rap in the PBL world, but there's structure built into this. There are systems built into this. And you know what? That's actually a good thing. We want to be proactive. We want to get ahead of it in terms of collaboration. And we want to set our students up in a way where they can thrive as they engage in collaborative projects. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? Would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or, gosh, wherever it is that you get your podcast? Would you also subscribe if you haven't done so yet? And maybe tell a friend or colleague about it. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways to get the word out. I'll also say that if you have not checked out my website, it is spencereducation.com. I have a YouTube channel, Instagram, Facebook, and a weekly newsletter that you can check out as well. So thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.